Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast. So excited to see Katie Howell is in the house.
Yay!
Yay! Now, I'm very excited, actually, because Katie's a bit of a ledge in her particular world. And I'm very honoured to have her here. And I love her Twitter bio. She's a social media expert, and her Twitter bio says that she's a CEO, speaker, smarty pants, and geeky girl.
Very smarty pants.
Yeah, well, if you're gonna have a social media person, you gotta have a snappy Twitter bio. So I'm winning on that account. She's the CEO of a company called Immediate Future, which has been going for 17 and a bit years. Because she launched in the same year as I launched my company.
Yay! Yeah,
which I thought was really cool. So according to the press, they're one of the UK's most respected social media agencies. Now this is the bit, by the way, Katie. I'm going to read out a whole series of your accomplishments, and you're going to feel embarrassed, and then everyone's going to feel a bit inferior, and then we're going to ruin it by getting into your darkest moments. But she was named the fourth most influential social media marketing expert by The Drum magazine, which is Europe's biggest, I believe, marketing and advertising magazine, and named one of the top 25 women to have shaped the digital industry by that same magazine. In 2020, she was named as an Innovator 25 by Provoke PR website for Europe, Middle East, and Asia, and was amongst the top 100 Asian tech entrepreneurs in the UK. Bloody check her out. Co-authored 3 books on social media. She's a guest lecturer at universities. She's somewhat of an activist on social media. I've been tuning in. And she's on the media a lot. So TV, radio, press, BBC News, Victoria Derbyshire Show, Reuters, Telegraph, FT, Guardian. And she's graced our humble podcast with her presence. Not quite the BBC, but, you know, we will try our best. We're heading that way. So welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Before I forget, because I keep on forgetting this and getting told off by my marketing guy, this podcast is brought to you by the tech department, which is my company. And that's the one that I blew up in 2017. And I did turn it around, thank goodness, but I don't want to do it again. So that's why I'm running the podcast. That's why we're talking to Katie today, is to find out what she learned so I can learn from it. Because frankly, I could do with every bit of help I could get. And so could you probably, if you're an entrepreneur. So if you like all this and I'm trying to help people, if you believe in our mission, please share the podcast, tell your friends, give us a rating and all that good stuff. Do a good thing for me and us and all of us as entrepreneurs. So I'm excited because Katie's like a long-standing entrepreneur like me, and she's been going at it for a long time. But 2004, back in the ancient history of social media, was when you launched your business. So that was the same year as me. So what did it feel like when you launched Immediate Future? What was that like?
Let me go back a couple of years, because I was working at a big agency. I had worked at what was at the time called BNP DDB, that's now known as DDB, and then switched to OMD to work on the interactive division. And I spotted this thing, which is, it was back in the day when websites were built with Flash and brochureware. And I thought, these message boards and MySpace are a fab opportunity for brands to talk to their customers and really get to understand them and be part of the conversation, you know, that whole Web 2.0 thing that was floating about. So I jumped ship, which was interesting because I just had my second baby. I made my husband give up work to look after babies, and so I had two. And I sort of set up as a freelancer almost, if you can imagine. I ended up at about 18 months, 2 years later, with 20 clients, including EMI, working for very large bands and brands, if you see what I mean, all on my own. And, you know, getting up at 3 a.m. and trying to get it done. You know what I mean? Trying to get it all done.
Yeah, yeah.
Just did not occur to me that I needed help. So the first person I got was someone to help me with invoicing because I was getting in a muddle and that kind of thing. And then I hired an account manager. And then I thought, bugger me, I'm an agency.
Yeah. Oops, I've made a company.
And it really was that, because everything was moving at a million miles an hour. I mean, Twitter came out of the woodwork in 2006. You know, everything was happening. Everything was beginning to move. And I was finding myself in 100 different directions. Really, my plan had been to go freelance. Okay, that was my plan. What happened was I was working pretty much round the clock and began to hire people. So that's why we say we started in 2004. We actually, you know, pretty much 99, you know, before right. we kind of got going and everything else. So, so there's me with this little company. We moved out into a place in Surbiton. It was like one small little room, working for lots of brands. Then decided we were growing too big for that and moved to a slightly bigger office and thinking, I'm going to grow. Don't know how, but I will. And luckily enough, I come from a biz dev kind of background in agency. So, you know, selling stuff is no problem for me. I am a marketeer, but it was not an issue. And I had a lot of contacts. And so I began to win business and more business. And one of the clients that I worked for was Sony Electronics, who, after doing a couple of projects, said, we want to transfer all our comms budget to this. This is, so they took a PR out and wanted to talk more about blogger relations and getting involved in this kind of new upcoming space. And we grew, I think it was about fourfold in 6 months or something like that.
Wow.
And oh my God, I had a fabulous team. It took a while. We hiccuped our way to get to that point, but then we got to this space where I just had this curious, creative, amazing team. And we poodled along quite happily for some time till the banks did their merry dance in 2000. And I think it hit us about 2010. By the time it was 2010, 2011, we lost some clients in the process of that and went from big company to teeny tiny again.
Really?
And that's partly also because everybody suddenly went, oh, so it now had a name, because it didn't have a name to begin with, social media. And we found ourselves competing with, you know, not just a lot of small companies, but all the big network agencies who already had established relationships. So where I'd had a very open door, we went back down. But that's not where I blew things up. Okay, things went bad, but crisis is crisis. And actually, I'm quite level-headed and don't tend to run about, you know, waving my arms in the air when things get a bit disastrous. But I'd love to tell you about what really I think is only in hindsight do I realise how bad it got.
Really? Yeah, go for it. I'd be great to hear. Yeah, please. Lay it down. Lay it on us. Come on.
Okay, so after we went down to, I think it was about six of us, we had a miserable, miserable year, sort of in the backlash of the financial crisis. And then we began to pick things up again. Little change in staff. We picked things back up again and we grew really quickly. And I hired really fast, really fast. And it
what does that mean? How fast is fast?
Like in 6 months, 10 months. Yeah, not even 6 months.
And how many people were you hiring in that 6 months?
I think it was about 16 in total that we ended up hiring, with including a few replacements. It's not like we were huge.
It was a lot of people, though, in a short
time. We began to win, you know, we went from zero to, you know, 1.8 million or whatever it was. We just jumped. Literally jumped in this very short period of time. It was fabulous. We were winning business and we were losing business. And it took me a while. And the reason I'm stuttering is it took me such a long time to work out why I was so unhappy, because I just became incredibly unhappy. The team was just toxic. And we had people sleeping with each other. We had stand-up rows happening in the office. We had, I mean, it was just an absolute nightmare. And I had no idea, Dan, how on earth I was going to deal with it. And so I tried to put fixes in. I tried to have, but I'm, like many entrepreneurs, I'm quite a coward with confrontation. I've always led with a very open heart. and so couldn't understand people's attitudes or why they were behaving this way. In addition, I had a lot of friends who were also leaders who were going, oh, millennials, they're just millennials. Right. And I was like, it's just millennials. It's just millennials. It's just the way they are. Yeah, well, that turned out to be bollocks. millennials. They're quite normal people. Again, I let this drift and drift till one day I said, I just don't want to work here anymore.
Really?
Now what do I do? Such a horrible place to work. And so, yes, I had to find a way to change the team. Many of those I encouraged with a new hire to kind of not find themselves quite so comfortable in the organization. And I still didn't really understand why. I thought it was all their fault. And look at all these people, they just don't understand. We have to be like this. And, you know, why can't they be curious? Why can't they learn? What a ton of poo that turned out to be. Because it's not them, it was me. It was utterly and totally my fault. And it's my fault because for three reasons, I would say. The first is I hire people because I like them. That doesn't mean that they're right for the position that I'm hiring them in. The second is, I'm like every other entrepreneur on this planet, which is, oh, shiny squirrel brain, which means I'm absolutely bloody awful at following through on other people's careers. And the second is that I think in a slightly different way to other people. So I don't put structure into my life because I see patterns everywhere. I just see them. But other people don't think like that, and they need structure and they need a format and they need an operational process, none of which I'm actually capable or, by the way, really like doing. I moan if I have to do it, you know. So what I learned the hard way, and we can talk a little bit emotionally how it virtually threw me to my feet, to my knees, and I'm an optimist. But what I learned is I needed to come out of the equation. It's not that I needed to get better, because for some reason, I don't know what it is, and maybe it's my heritage because I'm the daughter of two Indian people who came here back in the 60s. And we do tend to have a work ethic and a view of the world that is completely different to everybody else. And I am that typical second generation.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Obsessive. I don't know, which means that I think I can do everything. Mm. Why not? You know, if they can do it, I can do it. Mm. It might just be me. I got mine, by the way. One of the biggest learnings for me was that I didn't have to be able to do everything. And I didn't have to bend myself severely out of shape. If I am not a people manager, I am a people person because I still do BD, but I'm not a people manager. It's a really different skill set. That if I am not good at hiring because what I do is sell to people, that I just can't help myself. I just love the business. I'm passionate about what I do. I just fall into the trap of telling them how wonderful it is before I sit there and critique whether or not they're a good fit for ours. And then the confrontation bit was a very big challenge because I find it really hard. And I'm sure I'm not the only person the only boss that finds this very difficult, but I really find it hard to be critical of people. Happy to be critical behind their back, but if I look them in the face, what I see are sweet little kids. And I find that really difficult to know how to I either don't say anything or I'm vicious. I don't mean to either.
Wow, it's really, I know it's funny, you know, just for what it's worth, it's come up in our company recently where, have you come across a book called Radical Candor?
No.
It's a woman called Kim Scott. I think you'd like it because it actually frames out what you're describing. Dear listener, just imagine if you've got a kind of a line going up and down and a line going across, and top right is what she calls radical candor. And that's where you speak to people, where you care passionately, but you challenge directly. right? So you go, listen, I know you're trying your really best. You're a great asset to the team, but that was a mess, right? So do you know what I mean? So you actually lay it down, but you do it in a way that's like supportive and compassionate, right? But the other bottom right is what you just said there, which she would define as obnoxious aggression. Your shit, that was shit, you know. So the message gets across, but it's a kind of harsh message, right? And it sort of makes people feel defensive and wounded. And then the other one, which is top left, I think, in the quadrant, is ruinous empathy, right? And this, we're guilty of this, where you go, ah, you're great. Don't worry. I know it all went wrong, but we'll just have to learn from that. But everyone's going to learn, including you, but not just specifically you. So it's like you're not actually laying it down. So you'd never tell them. And what's quite interesting about Kim Scott is she says that she was at Google and Facebook, like very high up. And there was some guy who at some point she had to let go, but they'd been bitching about this guy for 6 months before. And as she let him go, he said, why didn't you tell me? I've got a wife and kids and a mortgage. I could have adjusted my behavior, my work. And she said she didn't have an answer to that. And I thought, wow, yeah. So it's ruinous empathy. You're not actually helping the person because they can't grow. And I think the other quadrant is insincere manipulation. That's it. So the point is this framework is really helpful on specifically this point because it helps categorize your thinking about what it is or isn't. And again, to empathize with you, I struggle with this all the time. It's really hard because like you, it's a nice, innocent person and you know trying to do their thing and you don't want to lay it down.
No. And I also think that by our nature, for many agency owners, we're visionary leaders. That's what got us into the place we are already, which means that I'm forever looking forward. So what I don't like doing is looking back and picking the pieces up. That's the boring bit, isn't it? It's like reading a manual. You know, I still have yet to meet an agency entrepreneur that reads a manual who doesn't open the product and give it a go.
Because
that's what we do.
So, yeah.
So that was a real dawning of understanding. And what it's, the beauty of that was then I began to understand other things that I didn't have to do. And actually it was better that other people did them too. It became an evolution of letting go because I found myself a fabulous co-director who heads up operations. I found myself a fabulous MD who can kind of manage things. And over the last, you know, how many years it is now, we've been working together. There's a trust bond in place. And more importantly, it's given me confidence to let go of other things. But I still go back to this issue, which is that we expect ourselves, because I could have blown the whole lot up. We were losing, let's put it this way, in 1 year, in one of those toxic years, I won £1 million worth of business. And in the same year, we lost £1 million worth of business.
Wow. So it's a completely like in one door, out the back door.
Yeah.
So what year was this? So is this 2010 time? Is this the sort of earlier than that?
Probably about 2013, maybe.
Or okay, four. Right. So, yeah, all right. So you got through the financial crisis. You've grown, like you kind of kickstarted the business again. Yeah. On the one hand, so at that time, though, I can imagine you've got this sort of adrenaline rush thing going on where you're like, yeah, we're back, baby. I'm like cooking on gas and hiring 16 people in 6 months and woo. So at that time, just sort of before the toxicness became apparent, what was in your head?
Yeah, exactly that. Oh my God, we're going to get back there within a year. We're back where we were, growing again. I'll be, you know, a 50-man team. We're going to, you know, I've never wanted world domination, but I wanted a nice, I wanted a new adventure. So that's what I thought. Great new adventure. It's going to be fantastic. You know, one of the horrible things about what we do, and one of the wonderful things that we have as agency owners is that we work with people. It's the bit that inspires you, but it's also the bit that's horrible. It's messy. It's unpredictable. Egotistically, and I say this with the, you know, I'm 55 now, so I really don't give a damn what I say these days. I don't care that much. But one of the things is that we have an ego. I just thought everybody thought like me.
It did not
on any level occur to me. And the real risk was this: if I hadn't realised, and I was so down and so miserable that I actually put up a slide saying, I don't want to work here anymore. You know, that misery of not wanting to be, to come to work every day. Just feeling like, oh God, I've got to go.
It's a tragedy, really, because you created a thing that then crushes you.
Yeah. My husband used to call it my gilded cage.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can relate to it. I've been in a similar situation. It's a different business to the one I'm in now, which was running concurrently at one point. But yeah, gilded cage. I was on very many levels. It was like status, money, travel, big name, this and that. And I was being crushed to, not death, but I was definitely being crushed into a burnout for 100%. And that's what happened to me when I was in my early 30s, which took me like a decade to get over, actually, and physically and like my health. So it's so easy to do. And I think particularly when you're a visionary and you're creative and I'm a classic visionary kind of creative leader, and you're so enamored with your vision of the future and it's so exciting. And like you, I've really struggled with that. Why isn't everyone seeing this? Yeah. I know it only exists in my mind, but why doesn't anybody else see it? Right? And then reality starts to hit you. And okay, so you're in 2013, you're on this adrenaline high, you've hired all these people, you're pumping, you're back, baby. And then this toxicity thing had, I guess, started to happen. And then at a certain point, you recognize it's happening, because I guess it's probably, oftentimes you're the last to see it as well when you're the boss.
Yeah. But we began to firefight. That's where the problems began to be apparent. There was always a little bit of tension, but the constant firefighting, the peaks and troughs that we have in agency life got very, I mean, we were on the high seas at this point, you know, we were going up, up, up and down, down. It was like a roller coaster.
Wow.
And, you know, I had clients calling me, I had arguments in the office, temper tantrums, just nothing seemed to work. And I you know, there are sort of what you said, you know, there's different types of leadership, and I would love to be the kind of people leader, but I actually do better kind of as an inspiring leader. It's not that I don't care, because I do care. I couldn't find the buttons to press to make this work. And it was partly also because we had our culture had gone a bit haywire. And the people within the business had no direction, or, I mean, they had job functions, if you see what I mean, and we'd list it, but I thought that's good enough. They've got it all written down. This is good enough. Why don't they just understand? Why aren't they passionate about this? Why aren't they tweeting every day? Why aren't they doing all of this stuff? Why aren't they I just couldn't understand it. And I got myself in the right knot about it. But more importantly, I found that the whole atmosphere and culture of the business was exactly as you said, burning me out. You know, there were tears in the shower every morning. It was just dark. It was a really dark time for me. And I felt so isolated, because it's really, I mean, what do you do? Who do you talk to? I've hired people who I don't like.
Yeah. And I'm not speaking on your behalf, but often you feel foolish.
Yeah, I felt
like I've done this a lot. Like, you hire someone and they're just a bad fit and possibly a bad person, and I've done that before. And it's just like, oh, hang on, I'd made this choice and I was in love with these people for a period of time and telling everybody how great they were, and now that was just a terrible decision. So there's a certain level of kind of, I don't know if you have this, but like, in fact, I'm going to ask you this question. So you talked about your ego with sort of, why don't people think like you? And that's a kind of a sense of identity that you identify with and you can't see outside that. There must have been a moment of time where, you know, obviously there's these negative reactions to you, but when the ego had to accept reality.
Yes.
Now, did that happen? And what did that feel like when that happened? What was going through your mind or were your emotions?
So actually, that's a really good point, because I think that it got to that breaking point where I went, I don't want to work here anymore. And I went, right, okay, you've got two options. And by the way, at this point, my tiny little one had grown up quite a lot and was now in private school. So up work was not an option, given my I'd pushed my husband to do the same. So he was out of the career ladder now. So I lay it down and went, what do you want? Really just taking that step back and went, right, what do you want? And I went, well, I don't not want to work, but I just don't want to work like this anymore. So how do I change it? And once I was able to get pragmatic, my ego died immediately. And I went, right, okay, I can't do this on my own. I'm going to need people. So I hired one, and then we've hired the second, and that has been. And then I also wrote down a set of, I'm not having people that are like this.
Really, right?
And I'm so, because I don't know if you're the same, Dan, but you know, people often say you can't be emotional in business. I can't think of another way of running a business.
Well, quite. Yeah.
I absolutely love what I do. I love the people. I fall in love with all the people I work with. Always do. You know, let's face it, we spend 40 hours plus a week with them. We often have to go through really hellish periods as well as fun stuff together. And it's, you get to know them really well. I can't be a robot. It just wouldn't fit me. So I thought, well, how am I going to protect myself from this feeling of isolation? You know, feeling that I'm not in control is not the right word, but that feeling that things are escaping or in directions you don't want to go in. Mm. And so part of that was also for me to say, here are where the lines are. If someone is not, and since that date, if someone is not a good fit or they're a problem, I then say, right, they're going. There's no second chances, third chances, fourth chances, or even fifth chances. There's no, because that's what I kept doing, was giving people the opportunity, and they'll improve. They're just good people at heart, but it was It was killing me. And, you know, I'll give you an example. In one year, we had the team, when it was slightly smaller, I think, no, maybe about that, come over to my house in my garden and have a barbecue, where two of the senior people at the time were chatting to my husband, telling him that they would take over the business in a year's time. Oof. And bless him, he never told me for a couple of years, but that gives you an idea of how I felt I was ostracized in my own business.
Wow.
I think culturally. Give you an idea that everybody, all these folk thought that they could run the business. Now, that was not down to them. That was totally my fault of being, yeah, we can do anything. You can be anything. I threw that at them and told them that, and told them they could be free to do anything. And I think, yeah, that you actually have to be quite focused on how you lead people. Mm. I don't think that ever dawned on me until that point.
Yeah, it's funny. I had to bear this. One of the reasons we fell off a cliff in 2017 was a similar situation. And it wasn't the same. It's not the same, but there was echoes, and I was a bit like, yeah, we just do like whatever, and I like you just thought, well, the rest of it will just fill in because everyone's as intuitively good at this as I am, as I thought at the time, and like you, I very much see patterns everywhere, and I'm not a very big process person, but I know the importance of it now. But part of this is the focus, and actually, you're on a mission, and everyone needs to stick to that, including you. Now, within that, there's parameters to be creative and riff, right? But you've got to get that sort of direction. And so can you sort of speak on that? Because I think there's a bit here of how does a leader, or it's not someone's listening to this now, an entrepreneur, and maybe it's not quite as extreme as the situation you were in, but they can see some echoes in that. Like that how they're not naturally kind of like process people. They're not naturally kind of, you know, manager sort of people. How do you connect a vision with reality? You had your kind of fingers burnt real good through this situation. So what's the sort of practical lessons that I can take away from that, your experience?
I did two things. First of all, I'd lost any authority in my own business. I don't know if that was just because I'm a woman or whether or not I was just an idiot at the time.
Woman or idiot, your choice, yeah. Go for it.
So a couple of things. I read a book called Get a Grip, which is the EOS system.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which talks about visionaries and integrate. And then they have this job called integrator. And I hired someone who is fabulous and still with me. Turned out that they weren't the integrator. They're fabulous, but they're almost like an adjunct to me. Right. And then we hired an integrator. And what's become fabulous about that role is I can splurge all my visionary stuff and they put process to it. I can go to them and say, I'm really not happy with the work that I'm getting back from this person. I mean, I don't do much client work these days, but if I was to say, or I spotted that we've got a couple of mistakes hanging with this client, and they will balance my either, as you rightly say, aggressive kind of critical side versus that, oh, they're fine.
Yeah.
Everybody needs, you know, they'll balance that and take that forward. I found my solution by getting someone who could translate me, because I thought, this is the reason I thought this is. It's not just because I was being easy on myself. It was because if I could gear up and weigh up this side of me and become a people manager, which some leaders are, but then how much time am I going to devote to being a visionary, to taking our story out there, to helping and paying it forward, which is our kind of ethos at Immediate Future, by helping to educate those out there. So how do we do that? How can I do both? Because, you know, there's only so much mental bandwidth any human being has. And you know, I'd find myself, you know, tapping my fingers in long one-on-one meetings because I've just got so much to get on with. So there was no point in me trying to do every job. And that I think is definitely a lesson learned, because we think things like people management is free, isn't it? It feels free. It doesn't feel like something. There's no barrier to entry. Surely you can manage people. You can do a few courses and learn to manage people, but that's not the whole issue. As a leader, I have my role that I have to, and that's what I mean about drawing some lines around what my role is, which is I can't be everything. I can lead the business because I can see what's coming down, because I have that pattern recognition. I can see what's coming next. I can see that, for instance, in 2022, social shopping and social commerce are going to go mad. I can see it now. I can see that in B2B, brand is going to matter because trust is a big issue. I can see where that's heading in social media. That's what I'm good at, and I can lead the business down that road for its own financial and economic health.
Yes.
What I can't do is both. And that includes many other things. So, as I say, I do a bit of client strategic work and the visionary stuff, which I work damn hard at, by the way. I don't just sit about and go, oh, I've had a vision.
Sure, yeah.
You know, as in my thought lead, I work hard at thought leadership. I work hard at building out models. I look at different techniques. I'm already looking at design thinking techniques, which are mostly used in technology, in how we can bring those into comms, for instance. How we can wrap B2B influencers, for instance, since you can see, look at me getting more passionate about it, you can tell. But that's my point. It's over there.
Yeah. And so what's great about you referencing the book Get a Grip and EOS, which by the way stands for the Entrepreneur Operating System, EOS. We run EOS in our company.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. And so we've read the book Traction, which is, I think, he's got a few books, yeah. A guy called Gino Wickman. But so we run EOS in our company, and I recommend it to everybody. And I'm the visionary.
Yeah.
And so the idea is you have someone who comes up with a vision. And again, vision's a funny word. I saw you being a bit defensive there about it.
Yes.
Because it's like, well, I'm not tossing it off. I'm actually doing some work. But the importance of vision, and again, it's a funny word because it sounds like you're just talking bollocks or whatever. But like, basically, it's what you want and why you want it. And it's so fundamental to, you know, this point about everyone's then got a target to aim at. North Star, we talk a lot about this concept in our company of a North Star. So when we create technology for people, we create first a North Star. So what's the direction of travel? Why are we doing this? And then when you're in the thick of it, you can look up at the North Star and orient yourself. Because when you're in the middle of a big technology project, there's loads of detail. And it's very easy to get off track strategically. So this idea of a North Star or a vision or a direction of travel is what you're talking about, because then all your team can coalesce behind that. Yeah. And then it's much more easy for you to sort of organize that and take everyone in a direction. But it's actually getting over your ego and your defensiveness about what you should be doing and focusing on what you're best at, which is what you're describing, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, because I don't think I blew anything up. What I think I did was death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And if I had, so it's a slightly different thing, because that stretched over years. I mean, it was just so painful, even when I think about it now.
So how many years was that, do you think? Like, just when you started?
About 5 years. I mean, I would say we've probably, this team we now have, who are just fabulous. They're just, given what we've all been through, just an amazing, they're just, I cannot praise them higher, but we're a collective now. We really do work together. Is about 5 years or so. Well, we took, but so it must have finished about, must have started to change around 2016. 17.
Okay, so there's probably
a long time. It did, because it wasn't just, I didn't just sweep in and go, oh, you're all gone, because I had clients to handle. And some people I had hoped would continue with us, and we then replaced them with, it was never a quick realization. It wasn't like, oh my God, I've had an epiphany. It was stages that I went through that then allowed me to be able to release parts of myself. It's said, oh my God, my ego is so big. But let go of some of this stuff, which is actually more about, and I've listened to some of your podcasts, I hear this again and again, it's more about your mindset rather than anything that's actually happening around you. Isn't it? It's a sort of a kind of a letting go, because in a way, changing your team, saying this isn't working, is also a sign of failure to the person you're speaking to. It's quite a difficult conversation to have.
Yeah.
Draw the line to say this isn't working for us. But I've gotten better at it, better at having a much better mutual conversation for someone who I just realized after 3 or 4 months might not be a fit. And now mostly I don't have to do it. Do you know what I mean? Because the team is functioning in that way that they do it. So so we're kind of weeding the chaff out. But occasionally I have to and say, well, I think it's best maybe you move on. We're in different directions.
It is the worst thing about being an entrepreneur is this bit. Actually letting people go. I mean, I've done it a bunch of times over the years, and it just makes me sick to my stomach. Like you, I'm not a big confrontational dude. You know, I prefer not to have that. And, you know, much more like, let's have a happy time kind of thing. And so getting into those places is very, very challenging for me. And it's been, you know, it is, I think for most people, unless you're some sort of psychopath, why would you even enjoy that? You know what I mean? Like, that's not a thing you want to do. But what I think is interesting about what you're talking about here, just a theme through the podcast, is your ownership of the problem and your ownership of your role in it. And you said there, like, unless you can change your mindset, this idea of letting go, and this is a common thread, it's your psychology, the entrepreneur's psychology, which is the issue, because you ultimately hired those people in 6 months and you allowed that culture to evolve and you set the expectation what they thought they could get out of your business. And by the way, I know that and I can see it in myself, because that's what I did. That's why my company went belly up. And it was like all me. Now, so if I had to work on me, like, and again, it's obvious when you say, like, when you lay it out, of course, if I work on myself and I become a better human being and more conscious, more aware of what is my strengths and weaknesses and others, and how that all fits together, that propagates out every day. And I create from that basis.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely spot on. Absolutely. And it's been brilliant, because as a consequence of that base being, I feel stronger and more confident in who I am. I'm going through the menopause right now, which meant I was able to come back and say to the team, listen, I suffered a lot over the last year with a bit of foggy brain, which added beautifully to being locked away as well. But I just said to him that there'll be times when I'm better off just shutting down and going and lying on the sofa and watching Netflix, because my brain is not functioning. And I was quite cool saying that and confident that, excuse me, that the team would manage and there would be nothing, because I'm not client side, I'm not firefighting. Oh my God. I'm not defending ours and trying to fix problems all the time. And that is such a joy. It's such a joy that I'm able to live my life. But you're right, it starts with yourself. And that is a hard journey, which is why I say it's death by a thousand cuts, because it took me quite a long time to be able to do that. It was not a fast fix.
Oh, listen, you're talking to a man who had a burnout experience at 32 and then had a couple of other sort of snafus in his early 40s. And by his mid-40s, managed to blow it all up. And it took me like a lot of banging my head against a brick wall for my thick skull to crack open and go, ugh, maybe I'm the problem. Do you know what I mean? Like it really, I mean, seriously, it's sort of embarrassing, really, admitting it. But and to your point, you're an entrepreneur and you have these great things going on and it's so exciting, but then you dig your own hole. And yeah. What was amazing, you've had this period of a long time, 5 or 6 years of working through that. And what's great is you sharpened the blade against the stone. You know, you've got sharper and you got more keen because of that. And yeah. That is, and again, what's cool, and what I think for me personally, anyway, is if I embrace that as that's the price of me becoming the person I'm going to become.
Yeah.
Yeah, the better version of me.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I can tell you how it played out for me when the pandemic hit. We were sorted in a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We were sorted in a week. We just literally slid to our home desks and continued. But everything, including their culture, shifted with it. And it just showed that we were all in our right roles, in our right seats, as they say in news.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
We were all in the right place, doing the right things. I'm not a mad fan of EOS. I'm terrible. I read business books and pick things out of them.
Sure.
And I'm in the middle of reading Felix Velarde's book at the moment as well, which
what's that?
Two Y 3X, which is 2 years, 3 times turnover, I think.
Okay.
Which has another set of systems. I'm looking at it from a, how do we go to our next level? What is that next level? What's the shape of it? How do we grow? Mm. So, but I will go and dot in and out of this, but I think there is something really energizing about knowing the things that you perform poorly at and saying, I'm going to delegate that to someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Or have a role specifically for this. Now, this gives me the chance to focus on what I am good at. And I do our new business. That'll be somewhere along the line. I will obviously have to divest myself of it. But I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and why divest yourself of it if you love it? I mean, But I think this is the thing. It's like it's embracing the fact that you're not good at some stuff and seeing yourself as the sort of problem on the path, you know, like and kind of getting over yourself in a way. About that phrase, letting go, it's letting go of your ego and your identity attached to that ego. And the fact I have a problem with like trying to be a perfectionist or controlling it too much.
Indeed. Yeah,
that's one of my self-sabotaging triggers is I'm trying to just be over everything and then it just, you know, I'm stretched, everyone's pissed off, you know, it's just a thing I have to work on. But this comes back to that thing of working on yourself and being really connected to who you are and being accepting of that and building from that basis. And I think that's what's really fantastic about your story is that's what you've done. And it's great. You said the phrase, it's now such a joy. And shouldn't that be the point?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I'll tell you something really interesting is I think there's one other aspect to this that maybe some of your female entrepreneurs will feel. I am so the wrong face and fit for an agency. You know, and bear in mind, I joined agency in the 90s. So where everybody was blonde and slim and I'm not blonde coming from Indian parents. I've got pink hair at the moment, but that's grey. That's the grey dyed pink. I've always been overweight, so I'm a bit of a tubby, slightly overly hairy Indian woman. I just did not fit. So even when I moved to be an independent agency, I would go to these agency conferences and I would look weird. And not only did I look weird, I've always thought there was some advantage to it. Nobody ever forgot who I was.
Sure,
easy to remember me. I didn't look like everybody else. But I felt inadequate.
Really?
So what happened with that inadequacy was that I wasn't quite, my face didn't quite fit. So what happens with that is it becomes an internalized process that meant that I would retreat very quickly and become anxious of saying the wrong thing. Right. And I'd actually do that in my own business. So I wanted to be like the guys at Mother or, you know, the big agency, and I wasn't. One of the things I think I learned most out of those horrific years was I just have to be me.
No, I was going to say, it's interesting. It's like a kind of the great gift in all that was you were able to accept you.
Yeah.
And of course, that is what is what's beautiful about you is you, not you trying to be somebody else or some sort of fake persona version of you. That authentic real you. So one of my guests, a guy called Peter Sage, who ended up in Pentonville Prison, the year before he was listed with Elon Musk as one of the world's top entrepreneurs. The year after, because of a contempt of court thing, he hadn't even committed a crime, ended up in prison. But he said, and he quotes from the book Think and Grow Rich, he says that every adversity contains within it the seed of a greater benefit. And he wrote that out on a piece of paper and stuck it on the wall in Pentonville Prison. And he committed to treat it as a learning experience so he could grow. And it was really stuck with me that because I thought, wow, yeah, that's like some like commitment to growth. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, but it's about being true to yourself and leaning into that stuff and learning and seeing it as a gift. Because now you can be you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice because it's timed nicely with my age and it's just, I don't know, there's a lot of happiness in building a business that isn't, you know, I bet you find exactly the same thing, which is how many staff have you got? What's your turnover? Blah, 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 blah. There's this, and I think I'm not on the same track, planet, universe you are because I don't care.
Mm.
I don't care for the things you care for. It's a bit Instagram, isn't it?
Yeah.
That whole thing, which is this is my beautiful body and I've done this. I mean, I pout and I just look like a blowfish, you know, it just doesn't work for me. It's never going to work. I'm never going to look like those women.
I think it's such a great, when you start to let, when you let go, that's all the ego again. Like, let go of all that stuff. And let it float away. Doesn't matter. And just be content with where your heart is rather than where your ego and your analytical mind tells you you should be because of some bullshit in the industry or what you saw on Instagram earlier.
And I think it might all be great. It might all be great and it might be the way everybody else does it. But I'm competing with them and I need to stop because I'm competing for the wrong things.
Yep. Well, and it's like you're climbing a mountain you don't want to climb.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we're edging up towards time has flown as always. What a beautiful conversation! We're edging up towards the end of our time together. And personally, I'm buzzing because it was so rich, full of like really good stuff. And so thank you for sharing so openly. Where should people find you? You are very prolific on social media, so I think people should find you and engage with your amazing, great content. And where's the best place to find Katie Howell?
So I am Katie Howell. At Katie Howell at Twitter, Katie Howell on, because I'm an early starter, so I haven't got any numbers after my name. TikTok, I am on Facebook, but unless I know you, you don't tend to come into my inner circle. I am on TikTok, but I'm just a browser. I am on Snapchat if you want to connect me there. I'm pretty much on all of those, or visit the website, which is www.immediatefuture.co.uk and there's contact details there.
Perfect. Well, we'll put all that into the show notes and I would recommend getting to the website. There's a load of good blogs on there and some interesting content and loads of stuff if you're interested in social media and learning about social media and advocacy and employee advocacy. A bunch of great content. So check it all out. Engage with Katie. She's a legend and she's so grateful for you to be here. And well, I'll hopefully see you soon. I want to say thanks, everyone, for listening, and I'll see you all next time. Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode emailed to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top five we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyibluupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyibluupthebusiness.com, and just enter your email address. There's a little box. Just enter it in, and we will send you that information. And it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company, give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.